We interrupt your regularly scheduled monthly almanac episodes and bring you Andrew, alone in the pod cave. Andrew here from the Revisionist Almanac. In addition to our normal episodes where we look back on past Academy Awards ceremonies with the luxury of hindsight and determine what the Oscars got right, and more importantly, what they got wrong, we decided to broaden our content a little bit and discuss movies happening in the here and the now. This has always been a component of our social media posts, so we just thought it would be the natural evolution of what we're already doing over there. So at the start of every month, I'll spend some time giving you a window into what I watched over the previous month, both new and old, share my thoughts on some of those films, and discuss further. Before we get into this, though, we would appreciate if you could subscribe to our channel on whatever podcast platform you're using, as well as rating and reviewing the show. This goes a long way to growing our brand and getting us one step closer to our advertising goals. In addition to that, you can also find us on every major social media platform, including Instagram, Twitter X, and TikTok using the handle @RevAlmanac. With that out of the way, let's get into some of my first-time March watches. First up, we have Madame Web. We may as well start with this one considering how talked about it's been online and not in the best way. Stars Dakota Johnson, who on the road to the film being released gave us one of the most epic train wrecks of a promo tour in support of the movie. It was wonderful to watch on social media, and it definitely piqued my interest as to what the actual film was going to bring. It also included Sydney Sweeney, who after watching the film, it appeared she was clearly just going with the flow, didn't seem too invested in what actually was happening in the movie, but she was there nonetheless. Adam Scott also involved in the film. It made me wonder, watching the film, Adam Scott, were you hurting that badly for a paycheck? Because you feel like you're above this as an actor. A little disappointed to see Adam Scott in the movie, considering how bad it was overall. And then the thing that really took me out of the movie from the very beginning, within the first probably 90 to 120 seconds, was Emma Roberts doing maybe the worst pregnant acting I think I've ever seen on film. It was so campy and bad, I couldn't believe what I was watching as an actual superhero project with a big budget behind it. Definitely made me scared about what I should be expecting from Kraven the Hunter, which comes out early next year, considering Madame Web and Morbius, Sony's two most recent projects, have really floundered in every possible way. Overall, my score for Madame Web was a 3.0 out of 10. It is available on digital for rental or purchase, depending on how much you want to torture yourself. I would not recommend it, though. The next film is Ricky Stanicky, the latest raunchy comedy from Peter Farrelly, currently available to watch on Prime Video. I will say that if you have Prime Video already, it's certainly worth taking the time to watch it if you're into comedies. You don't have to go out of your way to pay anything extra to see it. I had high expectations for it, being a fan of Peter Farrelly's movies in the past, especially things like Dumb and Dumber and There's Something About Mary. I am sad to report I did not have the same enjoyable experience with this as a lot of people I've seen online who really seemed invested in the comedy of this. It just didn't deliver in the way I was hoping for. It stars Zac Efron, who we know came straight off the Iron Claw set. To me, it sort of feels like a palate cleanser for Zac Efron. He put a lot of dramatic emotional work into Iron Claw, and this seems like kind of his release to move on with his life with something a little less intense for him. So it made sense for Zac Efron to take this project, I think. John Cena's in the film. I will absolutely say it's a good thing John Cena has broad shoulders, because he carried the weight of this film, which without him probably would have been a total piece of crap, if I'm being honest. But John Cena just has so much natural charm. He's got natural comedic timing. I think it's worth watching the movie to see John Cena and watch him continue to grow and evolve as an actor. It also had Andrew Santino, who I think proved yet again, most stand-up comedians, especially in this day and age, are horrific actors, and their comedy doesn't translate from stage to screen necessarily. So I wouldn't go into it if you're an Andrew Santino stand-up comedian fan. I don't think he necessarily translates that well. Was Ricky Stanicky better than Green Book, another Peter Farrelly film that won Best Picture? Sure. Would I rather watch Fever Pitch over Ricky Stanicky, though? Probably. I would say this is a mid-tier Farrelly at best, and if you really want to see the best of what Peter Farrelly can do, As a director, I would go towards Dumb and Dumber. There's something about Mary, even me, myself, and Irene. There's a lot of other options you could find out there that, to me, are funnier and have stood up better already. My ultimate score for Ricky Stanicky was a 5.6 out of 10. We now turn it over to Lisa Frankenstein, the teen comedy horror, currently available to watch on digital. I, again, had high expectations for this one. I had seen a lot of people who had seen early screenings of it praising it. It seemed to have a lot of 80s throwback vibes that I was really into, and it also marked the directorial debut of Zelda Williams, who is the daughter of Robin Williams. So I thought, okay, I'm curious to see what Zelda's going to do. Certainly rooting for her as a female voice in Hollywood, because it seems like in the last few years, female voices have kind of exploded in terms of the quality and the content that they've been putting out. So really rooting for Zelda there. The lead actress, Catherine Newton, I thought was fantastic. She's certainly a young actor to watch on the rise. I wish I could say the same for Cole Sprouse, her sort of co-lead playing the male role. I think he was the worst part of the movie, if I'm being totally honest. I did like the throwback 80s vibes. I thought it paid homage to certain movies of that time period that I instantly recognized. I think a lot of you will too. The problem I had with the movie, though, is it took until probably the third act for me to really start caring about the characters and the story. And unfortunately, that wasn't quite good enough that I don't want to have to wait till at least an hour into the movie to really start connecting with some of these. Does seem like it's already found its audience, though, and it feels like it's destined for some level of cult status, which I think is cool. The right demographic is clearly grabbing onto this movie. I just maybe not wasn't necessarily one of those people. But I do have a lot of confidence that Zelda's next film will be a step up now that she's got her first movie out of the way and under her belt. My ultimate score for Lisa Frankenstein was a 6.6 out of 10. Still above average. Worth checking out if you're into teen comedy horrors that kind of fit into this genre. Now we go over to Bob Marley, One Love. This is 2024's real first notable music biopic. The musical biopic is obviously a genre that is overflooded at this point in time, and it's not seeming to stop anytime soon with the Amy Winehouse Back to Black coming out later this year. Bob Marley, One Love is available on digital right now. First thing I'll say is Kingsley Benadire, who plays Bob Marley in the film, I think he nails the mannerisms, he nails the accent. He also has a really striking resemblance to the Jamaican legend and singer. So I was impressed with Kingsley Benadire's ability to act in the film. My main problem with Bob Marley, One Love, and this is really just a general hate that I have towards certain musical biopics, there's a disconnect for me when the actor that I'm seeing on stage isn't actually singing the songs by the artist. I would level this probably most notably at Rami Malek and Bohemian Rhapsody, but there's certainly many, many instances where this is the case. It just kind of takes me out of the film as a viewer. I like to see the actor that's on screen actually trying to sing the songs. I understand that Rami Malek won an Oscar for his work on Bohemian Rhapsody, but for me, I'll take Taron Egerton and Rocketman every day of the week. I think Taron Egerton really put himself out there trying to do some of those Elton John songs. I think he performed admirably. So I prefer that kind of music biopic versus what I think Bob Marley One Love is, which is, it's kind of like a reggae Bohemian Rhapsody, if I'm being totally honest. They just played it a little too safe, avoided anything that wasn't ultimately reverential to Bob Marley's legacy. So for me, it left a little bit out there. I've seen a lot of better documentaries on the musician. So if you want to get to know Bob Marley, the artist, I would recommend other avenues. If you're just looking for kind of a safe music biopic to pass a couple hours, this one's probably a good option. Overall, I gave it a score of 6.5 out of 10. Let's go over to the movie Origin, which is a biographical drama and the latest from director Ava DuVernay. I loved what Ava DuVernay did with the recent documentary 13th. I also really enjoyed her directing in the film Selma back in 2014, so I was excited to see what Origin was going to be. There's nothing to complain about with this film in terms of the acting that happens on screen. I think the lead actress, Ingenue Ellis Taylor, is terrific as the lead actor. It also has an appearance by John Bernthal, who is a tremendous screen presence, brings tons of intensity. Though I will say it was kind of weird, but also a little refreshing to see Bernthal play a character that wasn't completely psychotic. This went very much against what he feels like he's been typecast more or less for most of his career. I liked the general concept of the film in terms of it tries to weave in a documentary style with a feature film narrative. I thought it was interesting. It just didn't ultimately captivate me the way I think it was trying to go for. And at 2 hours and 21 minutes, it's a bit too long for me in terms of what the story's trying to do. I think it probably could have used trimming down a little bit. I'd still say it's worth recommending as a good film if you like DuVernay's past work. I think she continues to evolve as a director. I'm curious to see where she's going to go next. It's a good film. Was hoping for a great film. My score for Origin was a 7.4 out of 10, and this is also available to watch on digital. We're going to move over to a couple of Netflix releases over the last month. The first one up is Adam Sandler's Spaceman, a science fiction film. Didn't know anything about this one going into it other than the poster. Saw Adam Sandler in a spacesuit and thought, okay, that's interesting. I think Adam Sandler always does unique stuff in the dramatic space whenever he veers out of his normal comedy lane. It might not always work for everybody, but with Uncut Gems, Punch Drunk Love, just to name a couple, I think Adam Sandler has a lot of range as a dramatic actor that people don't give him credit for. Was curious to see what he'd do with Spaceman. The film also has Paul Dano and Carey Mulligan in it. Tremendous acting talent there. Not what I was expecting from Paul Dano as a role. I didn't see him playing what is effectively a spider that is talking to Adam Sandler the whole time. I thought Paul Dano was actually going to be physically in the film, but he's not. So if you're expecting to see him in the movie, you're not. Just kind of get that out of the way first thing. And then Carey Mulligan, she didn't seem fully invested in the film, but she's still Carey Mulligan. So when she's on screen, she never phones it in, even though I don't know if she was connecting with the material the way I was expecting her to. I can appreciate this movie for its weirdness factor, but I don't expect many are going to find this worth their time. It's just a little too abstract, a little too strange. I do think it'll be seen by a lot of people since it's easy to find on Netflix and Adam Sandler's in it. I just don't know how many people are going to walk away from this film thinking that it's something that they're ever going to want to go back to again. My score for Spaceman was a 6.5 out of 10. Then we'll go to the far, far, far worse Netflix fare. That was Damsel, which stars Millie Bobby Brown. It was billed as a dark fantasy. I honestly didn't have much expectation going into it. Nothing about it screamed that it was going to be interesting, but I figured I'd check it out anyway. I just don't think Millie Bobby Brown is there yet as an actor, in my personal opinion. I do enjoy her in the two Enola Holmes films. I think that Netflix did a good job with her there. But beyond her work in Stranger Things and Enola Holmes, I don't know if I've seen Millie Bobby Brown do anything that leads me to believe she's going to really grow in this generation of actors and be one of the top tier people out there. I hope I'm wrong, but I haven't seen enough of it yet. Damsel also had Ray Winstone, Angela Bassett, and Robin Wright in it, so it's got a tremendous cast. I just expected more from all three actors. It felt like they were taking a paycheck to a degree as opposed to really being invested in the movie. The CGI on Damsel is also shockingly bad, and this is something you can level, quite honestly, at a lot of Netflix projects that are original material from them that goes straight to their streaming service. They just don't have the CGI in place to really do what needs to be done for this kind of film. And ultimately, Damsel doesn't really seem to know what it wants to be in terms of the genre. It bounces between several genres. It has constant tonal changes. It seems confused into actually what it's trying to get across narratively. And because of the confusion, it led me to feel confused about what was happening. My ultimate score for Damsel was a 4.4 out of 10. Again, streaming on Netflix. But in my opinion, this is a completely skippable movie that you will not miss not getting around to. Let's go over to Perfect Days, the meditative film by Wim Wenders. It came out in 2023, and earlier this year at the Oscars, it was nominated for Best International Feature. The other Best International Features that were all nominated for Oscars last year, I think, were all terrific choices, so I had tremendously high hopes for Perfect Days. I am so relieved to say it was as good as advertised. It was something that really caught me in the right way at the right time. Koji Yakusho, who is the lead actor, gives an unbelievable performance. It's one of the best performances of 2023. It's a shame that he didn't get nominated for Best Lead Actor. I'm not surprised because rarely do Asian actors really get the credit they deserve over here in America when it comes to the Academy Awards. But I thought his performance was subtle. It was nuanced. He did so much work with his facial expressions, with his eyes. He didn't have to do a ton with dialogue to really get across the message of what he was doing. The movie also features one of the best soundtracks I've heard in this entire decade. I'm not going to ruin some of the fun of the soundtrack that's on there because if you check this movie out, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. But everything from a soundtrack perspective, played a crucial role in the actual film's narrative. And I always like seeing that integrated in that way. Just floored with the soundtrack. It felt like they were pulling something straight out of my iTunes. It, you know, I knew I was going to love the movie the first song I heard when it was played. I also love the idea of someone, the lead character, being happy and content in the place they're at in life, even if from a distance it doesn't look very glamorous, it doesn't look very interesting. He's effectively cleaning toilets every day for little parks around the city he's in Japan. So no glamour to it, but he seems content in his life. And you also don't need to know a ton about the full backstory of Hirayama's character to connect with him and get a sense of why he's doing what he's doing. And ultimately, this film had a fantastic final scene that left me emotionally satisfied with the journey we took through the film. I would say alongside Paris, Texas, which a lot of people point to as Wim Wenders' best film, this is right up there alongside that as his best work in his career. And he's got a really strong body of work start to finish. So if you like Wim Wenders, if you like international features and you want to catch some of the ones that were nominated for Oscars, I would put Perfect Days right at the top of your priority list. I gave it an 8.5 out of 10. If I see it a second time, it might even go up a little higher for me. Tremendous watch, currently available on digital. And I intentionally saved the best watch of March for last. It is Monster, which came out in 2023, the latest film from director Hirokazu Koreeda. I looked up what Monster's technical genre was online because it was hard for me to really categorize what it was. And they labeled it as a psychological dramatic mystery thriller. And I would say that's a pretty accurate description. I don't want to give away what happens in the film because it's really something you should take in on your own. But I think that those four words, psychological, dramatic, mystery, thriller, kind of hit exactly what this film is. If you're familiar with Koreeda's work or not, he's a prolific Japanese director. And I would recommend checking out Shoplifters, Nobody Knows, or Still Walking. Those are some of his best works, in my opinion. This film, Monster, is right up alongside the best Koreeda's ever done for me. Again, I don't want to reveal too much in the details of the story, but I was blown away by the overall structure of the storytelling, as it's effectively a film divided into three parts. Each part is told through a different character's perspective, and it slowly peels back the onion layers for the audience as you begin to understand kind of what the context of the film is. Koreeda also has a history of working very well with child actors from his previous films. This is no different. The child actors in this movie are absolutely sensational. Really tip my hat to them and the work Koreeda does, getting great performances from child actors. I was gripped from this movie scene to scene, and I was taken on an emotional roller coaster through all three parts and the different perspectives. It culminates in a final act that literally had me standing up applauding the way it ended. Just absolutely floored me. I knew I was going to love it. It was even better than I had anticipated. I believe Monster is a 2023 must-see film that I hope you'll check out based on my recommendation. My score was an 8.6 out of 10, and this is also currently available to watch on digital. Do you agree with any of my reviews, or do you think I'm way out of line with some of the scores? Feel free to DM me on any of our social media pages, or email us at revisionistalmanac@yahoo.com and leave your thoughts. Now, on top of these more recent films, I'm also knee-deep into podcast research on a very special upcoming episode of our show covering the 1994 year in film, which will release the first week of July. Now, for most of our Almanac episodes, I try and watch about 30 or 40 movies in a given year so I can get as much possible prep in and determine what movies deserve consideration for Oscars, but I made the bold, or probably more accurately, dumb decision to try and watch 100 movies from 1994 as prep. At this point, I'm nearing completion, but it will be the last time I ever go this far into one particular year. I've watched multiple Jean-Claude Van Damme movies, a Steven Seagal movie from 1994, and I'm starting to lose a little bit mentally. Since this 1994 episode will mark the mid-year point of season one, we wanted to do something extra cool and invite three guests on instead of just one. That's right. Joining us will be the entire 1001 by one crew. We have Adam St. John, we have Britt Reinholds Hobson, and we've got Joey Rogate. Now, if you're not familiar with their show, I can't recommend it enough. They dedicate their episodes to covering films directly out of the book, 1001 Movies You Must See Before You Die, as well as special episodes where they rank the entire filmography of selected directors, like their recent episodes on the films of Edgar Wright. You can find them at 1001 by 1 on all the socials. I would definitely seek out their show and check it out. That's going to wrap things up for my March watches. I hope you had some fun listening on this first episode, and be on the lookout for more of this series at the start of each new month. We'll see you next time.